Okay, we did birds in flight. That's where it flipped off, huh? Because we were talking about hemoglobin FC, and then the computer decided to be tired. So we said these are called birds in flight. So they sort of look like a wing. So that's hemoglobin SC, which is an abnormal hemoglobin. Okay, Hal Jolly body. Hal Jolly bodies are pieces of DNA. So as the nucleus is replicating, if there's a problem there and pieces of DNA stay in the cytoplasm, broken off, or it's an abnormal division where maybe you have a folic acid or a B12 deficiency, sometimes they'll divide improperly. If pieces get stuck in there, a Hal Jolly body will appear. It's usually one body. It's not several. And so that's a Hal Jolly body. It will appear in the red blood cell, and there'll be sort of a purple inclusion. So this is why Hal Jolly bodies are formed. So as it's dividing, something's gone wrong. And so there's asynchrony, or as it's dividing, something has come off that nucleus. And so these little things that are left over in a mature red cell are called Hal Jolly bodies. So it's DNA. So here's a nice picture of a red cell with a Hal Jolly body in it. So can you see that that's quite big? Well, let's see. Try that. There we go.
Does that make the red blood cell malfunction
in any way? No, because as it goes through the spleen and by the macrophage, it'll pluck it out. But it's fine. No, not usually. It won't show it because this is not on the periphery. It's right usually in the middle of the cell. So if you look down here at the bottom, you can see another one. So it's an indication that something's going on. Okay, Pappenheimer bodies. Pappenheimer bodies are made up of iron, but they're attached to RNA. So it's iron plus RNA. Now, to prove that it's iron, you'd have to do a special stain, right? So the Prussian blue or the Pearls reaction. And so if we stained it with an iron stain, we'd see them right here. But they'll also show up on right stain because they're hooked to that RNA. And so they're just really tinier than Hal Jolly bodies, and there's usually several of them. So if they're in a red cell that has a nucleus, we call them sideroblasts. If little pieces of iron are in a red cell that doesn't have a nucleus, we call it a siderocyte. So sidero refers to iron. Okay, but the name of the inclusion is Pappenheimer body when you see it on right stain. So these are Pappenheimer bodies. We know that they're Pappenheimer because they've done a Prussian blue stain, so we know they're iron. This is a sideroblast because it has a nucleus. So these inclusions, sidero refers to iron. So we know that those are inclusions in there.
How do they stain in a right stain?
Kind of a purple color. They're usually singlets or doublets, and I'll show you one. But here's a nice one that's been stained with an iron stain. Okay, you remember the mitochondria that don't stain? But if you stain it with an iron stain, these are mitochondria that are staining inside of that, or the iron that's staining inside of the mitochondria. If we see all this clear around here, it's called a ringed sideroblast because the iron's clear around the nucleus. And that's an indication of a disease we'll start talking about soon. So here's an iron stain. These are ringed sideroblasts because they go clear around with those iron particles. Okay, these are the Pappenheimer bodies. So what we see on right stain are just little tiny doublets or singlet, kind of a bluish purple color. Doesn't look like a Pappenheimer body because it's not as purple and it's not as big. And these usually like to hang on the periphery.
Mm-hmm. So a sideroblast or sideroblast has Pappenheimer bodies.
Okay, if we stain it with right stain and you see them, it's called a Pappenheimer body. you stain it with iron stain, then you say that it's sideroblast or site because you've proved that it's iron.
Okay.
Okay?
So sideroblast is a type of Fibberheimer body?
Sideroblast, no. It's in the mitochondria. There are iron particles in the mitochondria. Sidero refers to iron only.
So some Pappenheimer bodies can be siderosites or blasts, but not all siderosites or blasts are Pappenheimer bodies. Right.
The Pappenheimer body means that it's attached to RNA. That's why you see it. But if you were to stain it with the right stain, you can call it a sidero whatever it is. Okay? So these are how Pappenheimer bodies form. So again, what you're having is damaged ribosomes. And this iron that's found in here gets attached to that. And these little RNA iron particles, you can see under right stain. So in order to say it's sidero, you have to do an iron stain to prove it. Okay? So if it's a sideroblast, it has a nucleus. If it's clear around here, it's called a ringed sideroblast. So all we're doing is identifying now. It's going to mean more to you when we get to the diseases. So this is a sideroblast. This is ringed sideroblast. Okay? These are siderocytes, even though these are Pappenheimer bodies, because Pappenheimer bodies we can see on right stain. So this is a siderocyte that has Pappenheimer bodies because we've stained it. This one is not Pappenheimer bodies. There's still some iron in there because we've stained it. So they'd still be called siderocytes.
So what if you stain it and you find Pappenheimer bodies, will there ever be a situation where you try and find the iron and you wouldn't find it? Okay. But it can go the other way.
We can only say Pappenheimer if we have a right stain. If it's iron stain and it's positive, it's sidero. So, this is just a right stain. So if you see these, those are Pappenheimer bodies. So you'd say something's wrong with the making of hemoglobin and the iron. Okay? What's this? What's this right here? Well, yeah, but it's kind of a blue stain, so it's probably polychromatophilic, right? What's this inside of it? It's not Pappenheimer because there are only one or two. Yeah, coarse basophilic stippling. What do you?
How does it differ from the homozygous body in this picture?
Because you can see that there's more than one. It's not round. A Hal Jolly body is round. This is probably a doublet, so it's not round. Okay, so we have other kinds of inclusions that are organisms. So when you take 417, you get to learn all about malaria. And so there are different forms of the malarial stages. What your job is to make sure you call it malaria when you see it, and or else call somebody else in so you don't miss it. But one of the things that, what's this called, oldies?
Ring.
Signet ring, okay. So this is a trophozoite of malaria. Depending on which species of malaria it is, it'll appear different. Now, some of them get this microgametocyte in here and get these little dots, little granules. What are they called? Schuffner's dots, Schuffner's granules. So it tells you that it's a malarial parasite. Okay, so this is what you can't miss. So see the signet ring thing here? It's a trophozoite stage. So you don't want to call this something else. You don't want to call it a Hal Jolly body and miss that this person has malaria. Okay, but you're gonna see more than one. Okay, what are these? All right. You wouldn't call that something, would you? Okay. Let's look at reticulum inside of a cell. When we do a right stain, we can't tell there's reticulum, right? Because you have to do a special stain to see it. So what's the name of the special stain? Yeah, but the name of it. Bluant creosyl blue, new methylene blue, something that's a supravital stain. Crystal violet will work. What you're looking for are these strands of reticulum. And if we stain this, remember these are usually a little bit bigger than 7 because it's going to be a polychromatophilic erythrocyte probably with all this RNA in there. But when we stain them and we see these, stain them and we see this reticulum, what do we call them?
Reticulocytes.
So here's a new methylene blue in. So these are reticulum. And so if we wanted to know what the percentage of reticulocytes for this stage is, we count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 maybe. And what are the total numbers? I don't know, but that's how you'd figure out a percent. So is it greater than 1%?
Yeah.
Okay, so when we compare them then, a reticulocyte is usually bigger than 7. It's polychromatophilic. When we do the supravital stain, we see this delicate reticulum inside of it. If it's basophilic stippling, we see it on right stain. We can still see it on supravital, but notice the difference. Okay, it's not... This is RNA, right? But it's in a different form. Okay, here's a Pappenheimer body, which is RNA plus iron. Shows up on right stain. It's still going to show up over here because it's RNA, right? But we don't usually do supravital stains unless we do retic counts. If it's a Hal Jolly body, it's still going to show up on both, but we're going to see it on right stain. If it's a Heinz body, we don't see it on right stain. We only see denatured hemoglobin when we do supravital stains. Okay, if it's hemoglobin H, same thing. Remember, that looks like a golf ball. These are hemoglobin H's, abnormal hemoglobin. We're not going to see anything here. So you have to know if I tell you if it's a right stain or a supravital stain, which it's going to be. Okay, so you got inclusions? Okay, let's go to abnormal maturation. Dys means abnormal, right? So dyserythropoiesis tells us that red cell's not maturing correctly. So if we have abnormal bone marrow cells and it can't divide properly, we're going to see all sorts of funny-looking things. We might see Hal Jolly bodies. We might see a nucleus that hasn't separated, so it makes it multinuclear. We might see asynchrony in here with this kind of blobs. We might see basophilic stippling. All it tells us is it's abnormal. So dyserythropoiesis means abnormal. So this is a person that has dyserythropoiesis. So if you look at this cytoplasm and this nucleus doesn't match the maturation of this cytoplasm. So there's asynchrony. Look at the Hal Jolly bodies that are being produced there. Look at this nucleus. So can you tell that's dyserythropoiesis? It's abnormal.
So when we did the megaloblastic series, would those also be?
Probably. Okay, that is dyserythropoiesis. There's also something called karyorhexis. Okay, karyorhexis means that it looks like the nucleus as it's dividing kind of just gets blown up. And so it gets shattered into pieces. And so you see nuclear fragments or pieces of nucleus because something's happened. So we call it karyorhexis. So it is dyserythropoiesis. It's not normal. But in this case, where it looks like it's just been blown up, it's known as karyorhexis. But they're both abnormal. Okay, let's see if you can do these. Which of the following inclusions can only be seen with a supravital stain? Okay, who's not voting today? You got yours in Ramesh? Great. Five of you? Okay. Who's not here? Raise their hand. Half? Okay, what do you think? Whoa! We sure split that one. Bet you see that again on Friday. Stop that, no, I mean it. Okay, it's E, right? You can't see Heinz bodies on a right stain. What do you see instead? Bite cells. What's the real name for a bite cell? What? Degmocytes, right. Okay, which of the following has DNA content? It is HJs, right? Because they're pieces of nucleus. Okay, are we done with that now? Now we can do white cells? And we already did some of this, because we've already gone through the maturation. So now what you're going to start on today in lab is to do differential counts. So a differential count on a peripheral blood, meaning the circulating blood that you draw and stain, your smear should look something like this. And I told you that you do your differential out here on the feathered edge where the red cells barely touch each other. Okay, that's how you do it. And you go back and forth, make sure you don't go back over the same area. So you just move one field, go up, move one field, go down, so that you keep track of where you're going. And you have to count 100 white cells, and you have to name them one by one. And so you're going to have 100 white cell count, and you're going to have a percentage when you finish. So we talked about the normal cells that you see in the peripheral blood. So these are the ones you're going to see. Well, red cells, and you always note the red cells. So if you were to look at a normal smear, you're going to say normocytic, normochromic. Or you're going to say macrocytic or microcytic. You're going to say normochromic if they have enough color, or hypo, right? So you always say what your red cells are. Then you look at your white cells and you're going to name them. So these are the ones that we usually see. So neutrophils, mostly segmented neutrophils, right? Okay, eosinophils with the red, basophils with the dark purple. We're going to see lymphocytes. Lymphocytes can do almost anything they want to do. So you're going to see these small lymphocytes that are looking like this, like just mostly nucleus. Then you're going to get some that have more cytoplasm and they flow and they got red dots in them. They're still lymphocytes. Look at the nucleus. Okay, you're going to see some bands. Okay, so in the handout I gave you today, it gives you the criteria for bands and metas. And you're going to see the monocyte. Monocyte kind of has a gray cytoplasm, maybe some dust in it. Folded nucleus or kidney bean-shaped nucleus. Those are the ones you're going to see.
Will we see nucleated rents?
No.
No.
Not normally. Okay, so which is the largest cell in the peripheral blood? Okay, should be the monocyte, shouldn't it? That's the largest one. Okay, which cell has a round nucleus and a sky blue cytoplasm? Okay, it better be a lymphocyte. Is that what you put? Yep. Okay. which cell has bright red orange granules, ideally? Okay, eosinophils. Which cell has heparin and histamine in its granules? Basophil. Okay, so normally when we talk about white blood cell counts, depends on who you use and what laboratory, but in general, it's about 4,000 to 11,000. Some will say 5,000 to 10,500, but basically that's it. So if you had 2,000, you know that's too low. If you had 12,000, you know that's too high. Okay? So it's a general kind of thing. That's your total lymphocyte or white blood cell count. If you work at a children's hospital, it's going to be different, because you have a little bit of age differences. So if we have a newborn, their white cell count's going to be different than an adult. The other thing you have to remember is there is an absolute white blood cell count and a relative. When you do your differential and you get a percentage, that's called a relative percent of white blood cells. So your percent is relative. To get the absolute count, what you have to do is to take your relative count and times it by the total amount of white blood cells that you have, and that gives you an absolute count. So you'd know exactly how many neutrophils, lymphocytes, eosinophils. Okay? So if you had an absolute, if you wanted to know what your absolute neutrophil count was and you had a 20,000 count and you had 75% that you counted differential, then you would have a 15,000 neutrophil count.
What's the conversion between per cubic millimeter and per liter?
Okay, per liter is international units. So that would be back 3 decimals. So if you just look at where the period is, that'll help you. So 15,000 per cubic millimeter. Okay, so these are in SI units. Okay, so we talked about the granulocyte maturation. You got to go back and remember that. Okay, so we started out with a myeloblast. We go to a promyelocyte, to a myelocyte, to a metamyelocyte, to a band, to a seg, okay? We have 3 families of granulocytes. We have neutrophils, eosinophils, and basophils. So when we start out with our myeloblast, remember the NC ratio is really high. And you can see nucleoli. And the chromatin pattern is quite delicate. It's a thin rim of cytoplasm. It's a lighter blue than a rubroblast. Okay? So you can see the nucleoli there pretty well, can't you? There's nice ones. Okay? At the late stage of this, it starts to make what? Granules. And the name of the granules are non-specific, but they're also called primary granules. So it starts to produce granules. Now, there are some things that are found in these granules. The most important enzyme that's found in a non-specific granule is called myeloperoxidase. Okay, it contains other ones, but do you remember where on the Golgi they're packaged up into these non-specific granules? Which membrane? The inner membrane that's closest to the nucleus. They're all packaged. They're made in the ribosomes, but they're all packaged in the Golgi. And so that's where the primary or azurophilic granules are produced. Okay, the secondary granules mean specific granules. So we know it's going to be a neutrophil or an eosinophil or a basophil. And what's the first stage you can see secondary granules?
Myelocyte.
Okay. And it has enzymes in it as well. that has lysozyme, collagenase, peptidases, so all of those. And it does have still some myeloperoxidase. But the myeloperoxidase we associate specifically with the primary granules. And they probably do have tertiary granules, and that's the lysozyme, which they need to kill bacteria or whatever they phagocytize. Okay, in the secretory vesicles, these are the ones that are going to surround whatever they engulf, as well as the tertiary granules. And in the secretory vesicles, when they surround them, they have lots of this enzyme that's called LAP. And it stands for leukocyte alkaline phosphatase. So we're going to talk about LAP scores, but it tells you that it has secretory granules for the purpose of killing things. So what's the main purpose of white cells? Fight infection, right? So here's our promyelocyte. Remember, by the time we hit the promyelocyte stage, they're making lots of primary granules, azurophilic granules. So this is our promyelocyte. We can see that the chromatin pattern's still delicate. You can still see nucleoli. But you see the granules. And so in real person, what are you looking at? You're looking at a pretty big cell, but look how many granules are in them. See lots of them. Okay, so this is our promyelocyte. So it's starting to make all these nice granules. Why does it look like they're on top of the nucleus?
Because
we're smashing it down and it's really cytoplasm on top.
Are these granules smaller than the other ones?
No. Actually, they look larger than a neutrophil. Okay.
So they're
redder.
A little bit bigger than the neutrophils.
Mm-hmm. And they're redder. Okay, here's a myelocyte. So this now is specific granules. So if you compare these granules, they look littler to me. And they're a little more blue-pink. But also go by the nucleus. Because you can't see delicate chromatin, can you? You can't see nucleoli. Okay, here's a nice segmented neutrophil, right? So look at the nucleus as well. So when we say white blood cells, the biggest percent of the white blood cells is going to be a neutrophil. So in the peripheral blood, and this varies a little bit from book to book, but about 50 to 70% of a normal differential are going to be neutrophils. Okay? So when we look at peripheral blood, we have to kind of draw it like this box. So this is our blood. We have circulating neutrophils and we have marginating neutrophils. Okay, the circulating neutrophils means that if you stick a needle in there and you draw blood, this is what you're pulling out, is this part right here. The marginal neutrophils are so close to the endothelial cells that you're not going to slurp them out in your needle. So the only thing we count is this circulating pool. So our total blood granulocytic pool, so TBGP, total blood granulocytic pool, will be made up of a marginating pool and a circulating pool. So the only thing we measure really is the circulating pool. And so when it comes out into the bloodstream, it lasts in the bloodstream anywhere from about 6 to 10 hours. And then it's gone. So every 6 to 10 hours, its half-life is about that. So this is what we're measuring, is cells coming out into this circulating pool. So where did they come from? They came out of this bone marrow, and they came into the circulating pool, and I'll show you how that happens. And then we measure this circulating pool. So hang on just a minute and see if I answer it. So if we look inside of the bone marrow, we have what's called a mitotic pool and a postmitotic pool. So mitotic means they're capable of mitosis or dividing. Postmitotic means their nucleus is so mature they can't divide anymore. So when they first start out, they're in this area right here, which is the mitotic pool. So the ones that can divide would be the myeloblasts, the promyelocytes, and the myelocytes. Once they mature into a metamyelocyte, they can't divide anymore. So they're in the post-mitotic pool. So we have metamyelocytes, bands, and segs. This is our storage pool, too. So it's all ready to go out into the bloodstream, but we don't go out unless we're needed. So we have a storage. Once it goes out into the blood, okay, they last about 10 hours. So when it gets out here, this is the total blood granulocyte pool. So it stays in the mitotic pool about 3 to 6 days. Then it goes to the post-mitotic pool for about 5 to 7 days. It's in the storage pool about 3 days. Then out it goes. And so it'll go out of here in this order. The segs will be released first because they're all ready to go. They're mature, and out they go to take care of whatever you need. Then the bands will go next. So we always push out the mature ones first. So what influences this, whether or not they go out, are these three things. So you can have a decreased storage pool, an increase in bands in the blood. This is what we're looking for. And a shift to the left. So let me go through what that is. So this just shows you then, here's the mitotic pool. So these three. Here's the post-mitotic pool and the storage pool. So metas, bands, and segs. This is the relative percent that you would see in a person who has a normal bone marrow. So you only see about 2% blast as opposed to 20% neutrophils. And you got more bands here because these are going out first. So we always send out the mature ones first. Okay, so when we're talking about releasing these neutrophils, if they start to be released, out go the neutrophils, so you're going to increase your percentage of neutrophils in a normal way. So if you have an infection and you need more neutrophils, out they go. So your neutrophil count will go up. So if normal is 50 to 70 and you get 80, then it's coming out fast. Okay, so that's one thing. Is if you get an increase in neutrophils and you start to see that you get more bands than normal, it's called a shift to the left, because you've shifted into the marrow and released them into the blood. Another thing that will influence their number is whether or not they can get out of the bone marrow, how easy for it is them. And so we say that they egress. And they egress means leaving. And so they do it by diapedesis. So here is the bone marrow. Here are granulocytes. They're all ready to go out there. So on this side, remember we have a basement membrane, and on this side, which is the vein, or the capillary, we have one layer of endothelial cells, right? So there's places in between here. They're not continuous endothelial cells. They have spaces. And so these little neutrophils have to get out. And so when they go through here, it's called egressing. And the way they do it is they have to contort. They have to squirm through that little hole. So they have to diapedese through there. Now, they go into the bloodstream. They're only going to be there about 10 hours, and then they got to go off to the tissue. So let's say you have an infection in your finger. So all the little neutrophils will know that. So they'll want to go to the finger and say, I better get out here and fight this infection. So now they want to get out of the blood and go into the tissue. So on this side we have, again, our endothelial cell. We have spaces between. So again, out they go. They egress out into the tissue, and they have to diapedese to do that. So once they go out in the blood, in the tissue, they don't come back to the blood. So if there's a big infection there and you got all this white pussy stuff, what is that? Neutrophils fighting infection, right? And so those are dead neutrophils that you got out there. So this is just a picture showing you then, again, the development. So it takes about 14 days to produce a mature one. And then once they get out there, they don't last very long, 6 to 10 hours, and then they go out into the tissue probably stay alive one or two days, and then they're gone. Okay, so what did you have a question about?
Oh, I was going to ask how we account for the marginal pool.
We can't.
Okay, so we can't at all. Okay.
So what's going to influence our neutrophil count that we're doing? Okay, the rate that they come out of the bone marrow. So if they come out really fast and you're pushing them out fast, it's increase your number, right? Okay, the rate that are circulating. That's the only thing we measure. So if our marginal pool and circulating pool aren't about 50-50, if more of them want to marginate, we don't measure those, right? If more of them drop off the walls and we measure them, that would increase the count. And then what rate are they leaving? If there's a big infection out in your big toe, they're going to leave faster. And so it would influence the count. So there are some factors that we have to look at that are not true infections. Okay, so when you're doing a white cell count on a patient, you need to know these kinds of things. So exercise and epinephrine can influence your white count. So what it does is, if you've just run 3 miles and you come in and you have your blood drawn to have a white count, you'll find that the marginal and the circulating pool aren't 50-50. That exercise and epinephrine have made the marginal pool drop down into the circulating pool. And so it would increase your white cell count, but it's not really anything wrong with the patient. They've been running. So you don't want to have them do that before you draw a white count. So you wouldn't know that, but hopefully if the physician asks you that, you could say it's a pseudo-neutrophilia because it's not true.
What's the point of pulling out those white blood cells during exercise? Why does your body do that?
It just drops them from the marginating pool down. It just does it because of the epinephrine. Okay, let's say you've had anesthesia. What it does then is take some of the circulating pool and puts them up on the cell, lining of the cells, on the endothelial cells. So when you put your needle in, you don't get them. So it causes a decrease in neutrophils, and so it looks like you don't have enough white cells. So you don't want to do somebody's white cell count after they've had anesthesia because it's going to be affected. So it's a pseudo-neutropenia. So the thing we really are trying to do with doing white cell counts is see if the patient has an infection. So you get a pain in your right side, you wonder if you have appendicitis, right? So you go in and what do? White cell count. Because if you have inflammation or infection, then it's a true neutrophilia. So these things are going to influence the infection because they want to go marginate before they go out into the tissue. But we'll talk about that. So the inflow from the bone marrow accelerates until this outflow is exceeded because you always try to have 50-50. So you're going to have more coming in to the blood and more going out, but you're going to reach a steady state.
In pregnancy, is it a change in the marginal pool, or is it really just an increase in the amount of white blood cells?
Don't know that. It's not, I don't think, an increase in the circulating pool. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Pregnancy is pathologic, so there could be quite a few factors. Okay, the problem is going to come to these patients that have an infection who all of a sudden can't have any more white cells come out. Pretty soon your bone marrow can't keep up, right? What's a normal rate that you can accelerate your white cell count? How many times normal?
4 to 6,
maybe. Okay, after you reach that steady state and you have such an infection they can't make any more, your bone marrow goes exhausted. And so what do you think happens to the patient?
They die.
They die because the infection takes over. So you have to watch for that. Okay, so another thing that affects it is called glucocorticoids. Anybody know what the glucocorticoids are, oldies?
Cortisol.
So if a person's on cortisol, then they're going to get a neutrophilia. Why? Because there are a number of reasons. It has more than one mechanism, probably like pregnancy. You get a decreased output from the bone marrow, so they can't egress out of the bone marrow. You get an increased input, and your marginal pool goes to your circulating pool. So all of these things, they can't get out of the peripheral blood. They go into the peripheral blood too fast, and they go into the circulating pool.
So when it says output, does it mean from the
bone marrow
to the pool?
No, in this case, it means from the blood to the tissue. They can't get out. So they get an increased input into the blood, but they can't get out of the blood to the tissue. So that's going to raise it, right? And then they drop down into the circulating pool. But again, they're on cortisol.
But it doesn't do anything to the actual bone marrow?
No. Just makes them come out too fast. Okay. Neutropenia, then, is the one that we're really worried about. Because if a person has an infection and all of a sudden you see their white cell go from really high to nothing, that's a life-threatening problem. And so the absolute number that the doctor looks at is this right here. If they have less than 500 cells per microliter, neutrophils, then it's pretty serious.
So why does that happen?
Because your bone marrow can't produce any more cells.
So it won't even keep up its normal levels?
They've already used up all the pool because it takes 14 days. Okay, so what's controlling whether you make more white cells or not? Remember granulopoiesis? Okay, so we have these growth hormones or growth factors that are producing granulocytes. And so colony-stimulating activity is one of them. We call them interleukins or leukopoietins. Okay, remember IL-3? Okay, it's a big one. Prostaglandin F is also another one. So these things are stimulating the production of granulocytes. But if we get too many granulocytes, sometimes we can control it. So there are what we call chelones that will stop the production. So it'll be an inhibitory mechanism. Lactoferrin's another one. And these come from mature granulocytes, so it kind of keeps a lid on it. And then prostaglandin E is another one that'll kind of shut it down. So the granulocytes have a connection over here in the kinin system. So from immunology, you remember what kinins do besides produce what? Pain. Okay? So you have an increase in your vascular permeability. You have cells open up. You get pain. You release the chemotactic factors. You get a fever because it releases pyrogens. And that tells you that you have something going on as far as an infection. So those are kind of things that happen in granulopoiesis. So we'll start on granulopoiesis tomorrow. So you got to go do some diffs today.